Blog Talk Radio.
This is Wade Keller, and this is the PW Torch livecast for Tuesday, May 16th, 2017, just seconds after SmackDown ended. Final hype for Sunday's Backlash event, and we are here to talk to you about that episode and the show-closing segment. Rather paint by numbers, Randy Orton the champion gets a win over Baron Corbin, as he should, as champion, with an RKO out of nowhere. And then Jinder Mahal comes out and talks a little trash to Randy Orton to kind of drive home. They've got their title match on Sunday. And then the Bollywood Boys, the Singh Brothers, come up behind Orton and attack him. And they beat down Orton briefly. Orton manages to knock them both out of the ring, as he should. And then Jinder Mahal charged at Orton, seeing an opening, as he should, as the heel. But Orton saw him coming and knocked him off the ring apron. Orton then went after the Singh brothers and set up a DDT off the middle rope, but Jinder recovered and attacked Orton from behind and took him down with his new finisher, and then stood over him with the belt as the show ended. Very much paint-by-numbers promoting. Sometimes simple is better. It's not all about the bookers reinventing the wheel. Sometimes it is about the wrestling personalities being slotted and portraying themselves correctly. Or effectively, correctly is probably not the right word, so that fans want to see Randy Orton beat Jinder Mahal on Sunday. Now, sometimes the personalities aren't enough to sell a pay-per-view event. Sometimes they're just not. And that is the question now. Is Jinder Mahal a convincing enough heel? But I also think another question exists going into Backlash, which is Randy Orton an effective lead champion? Is he an effective centerpiece for a brand in 2017 with the type of promos that he gives and that he gave tonight? So that's one of the topics on today's show. Give us a call, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We also encourage you to email us. Some of you can't call or don't want to stay on hold during the show for any number of reasons, so you're welcome to, during SmackDown, email us your comments and questions, and we can address those as the show progresses. But first, let me introduce my co-host for today's program, Greg Parks, longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist. Greg, how's it going?
It's going well, Wade. Thanks for having me on the show.
Excellent. You heard my introduction. Booking 101 at the end.
Yep.
Is Jinder a strong enough heel based on what you've seen since his number one contendership unexpectedly? He unexpectedly earned that in the six-pack challenge. And part two is, how's Randy doing post-Superstar Shake-Up, post-WrestleMania, as the centerpiece babyface champion?
Well, that's something that I thought of as you were going through your intro, talking about the relative paint-by-numbers buildup that we saw, not just in the main event, but really throughout the show.
Yeah.
With every match that was built for Sunday. It was very paint-by-numbers, very basic in a lot of the buildup.
Yeah.
And you look at a guy like Jinder Mahal, and you wonder, is just basic buildup, is booking 101 enough for a guy like Jinder Mahal? They didn't take many chances with him. And that's kind of curious, because I think with a guy like Jinder Mahal, who you know, is coming off of a stint on Raw where he was basically losing every week that he was on TV, I thought this was a time that WWE really could have taken a risk and done something more to build up Jinder Mahal as a real contender to Randy Orton's WWE title. Instead, you know, they played it safe. Maybe they didn't feel it was necessary to go all in on the Jinder hype, because maybe this is just a one-month stopover, and they don't plan on Jinder. Maybe he'll be an upper-card guy, still higher than he was on Raw, but maybe they don't see him over the next few months still challenging for the WWE title. So maybe they just, you know, did the basics, did as much as they could in a short amount of time to get fans to see him as a WWE title contender, but they didn't feel he was worth investing more time and energy from a booking standpoint in. Now, with Randy Orton, you know, the House of Horrors match hurt, and maybe WWE spent all of their booking creativity on the House of Horrors match, and that's why we got such a paint-by-numbers show tonight. There's always going to be a percentage of the audience that watches WWE that sees Randy Orton, pun intended, as a legacy star. They see him in the same category as a John Cena, you know, and that ilk as a main eventer, babyface or heel. He's not a guy who's going to excite you. He's not a guy who's going to bring in new fans. He's not a guy that's going to do anything unexpected. He's not going to reinvent himself. He is what he is at this stage of the game, and you know what you're getting with him. So I think to a certain extent, he's effective as a main event, in this case, babyface champion, because fans view him as that. They accept him as a main eventer. But you know, as we saw tonight and in the past, he's not a guy you can look to and fans aren't going to say, gee, I wonder what that Randy Orton's going to do this week. I'm really excited to see what he's going to do. He's just a guy that you accept in that position.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's enough for SmackDown in 2017 when you've got AJ Styles stealing the show, Kevin Owens so much more interesting, and Randy, I mean, I call him the B-minus player. You know, you know what you're going to get. He's a little above average in terms of, you know, the experience watching him. I think he's an A player in a lot of ways. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, I think he's capable and experienced and smart and as a respected ring psychiatrist. Well, that's another topic. Ring psychologist. I don't know what to do with that. But at the same time, just watching him, I feel like it's always a B-minus experience. It's like, I'm not bummed out by this. It was good, but it didn't feel high energy. And I thought tonight's match was kind of more of that. It was methodical.
Yeah.
It was crisp. You can't pick it apart, but it just goes poof when the match is over. Like, okay, that happened. And I understand he needs to do that, or he chooses to do that, because there's a lot of injuries, a lot of mileage on that body. He wants to be careful. He doesn't want to miss ring time. And really, that's serving his company well. That's serving his colleagues well, to not be injury prone. But still, I'd like to see him just turn it up to a higher gear now and then. And it just seems like that's not in him, both on the microphone and in the ring. But, I mean, he just kind of comes across like he can't be bothered, and he doesn't need to be bothered, because he can kind of phone in a B-minus performance, and he has enough cachet and star power from being around as long as he has to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, you know what you're going to get with him. He's not going to excite the fan base, but he's sort of entrenched in that spot where he's accepted as a main event guy just because of what he's done to get to this point in his past.
One thing I want to note that I want to do later as the show progresses here is, Greg, talk with you a little bit about what aired 10 years ago this week on SmackDown. It'd be kind of fun to look at, okay, at the depth of the lineup tonight and the star power and what they were doing 10 years ago, and just react a little bit to that. The main segment was Edge and Batista, and Chris Benoit in action against Finlay, and MVP and Matt Hardy. So we'll just spend a couple minutes on the 10 years ago SmackDown also. But we got phone numbers, we have a phone number and phone callers. Our phone number is 515-605-9345, and we have callers that we want to go to. You can also email us right now, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Let's go to our first caller of the day, though, and go to Chris from New York. Chris, welcome to the program. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to say SmackDown, I thought, was a pretty solid show. Kind of enjoyed it. Definitely better than last night's Raw. How you guys feel about the job that they're doing with the Fashion Police? I'm going to start off with them, because I feel like that's a duo that has a lot to offer. I don't think they're featuring them right. I don't think the comedy, quirky stuff is what they need at this point, especially if they want fans to take them seriously as a babyface team going against the Usos. So what do you guys think about what you saw from them two tonight?
Yeah, what is it, week three now of the Fashion Files, Greg? Are you finding yourself going through your closet with shame?
always. I am not on the cutting edge of style by any means. In fact, my students just remarked to me this past week that I need a new wardrobe for next school year, so that'll be my summer project, I guess. But anyway, so I would be certainly getting ticketed by the fashion police. I thought tonight's vignette was better than last week's. You know, they got a win over the Colognes. They're getting noticed with the backstage vignettes and the pre-tapes and stuff like that. And, you know, your mileage is going to vary based on your taste in comedy, I guess, and how you're willing to how much you're willing to give WWE the benefit of the doubt when it comes to them attempting comedy. So, you know, they are what they are at this point, I think, and I hate to even say that there's a higher ceiling in them if they got away from the comedy, because they're a tag team, and inherently, with the way the shows are booked now, tag teams are not going to be upper card wrestlers. So I don't really find any kind of fault with how they're being booked as far as going the comedy route. I think that's something that's getting them noticed, and that's what they need more than anything else right now.
All right. Chris, I like what I see with them, but I don't think I'm chuckling enough. Like, I don't think it's quite clever enough, but I think it's close enough to working that I wouldn't call it a bomb either. Like, I'm kind of on the cusp of going, yeah, this is kind of working, but I'm kind of nervous watching them because I'm not quite sure that WWE, you know, Greg, as you said, even professional comedians are hit and miss, you know, SNL, some things are funny and some aren't. But if nothing else, I think they're taking two personalities in Fandango and Tyler Breeze that have more potential than what we saw in them. And I like that they're giving them a try. It's like, I like that they're giving them a little something extra. The Cologne brothers, or Epico and Primo, they haven't done anything with them, but at least now, but they're pushing them, I guess, a little more than they did on Raw. It didn't last very long, it didn't seem. But the Usos getting mic time. On Raw, you got Goldust getting some storyline attention. Like, some of this stuff wouldn't be happening if not for the roster split. Sometimes you look at that roster and you go, we got to get some new guys over. And so I think this is a good faith attempt with two characters that I think are doing, they're even if they're not laugh out loud funny, I think they're affable, they're enjoyable to watch, they seem likable enough, and they're kind of endearing in their obsession with fashion. So, I mean, I think it's kind of working, but like I say, I'm hedging a little bit because I guess I want it to be a little more funny than it is at this point.
And I think part of the problem with the gimmick, too, is it's a heel gimmick, really.
Yeah.
And now they're playing it for laughs. It's working for laughs, but, you know, they were initially heels, which I guess it worked when they were heels, but it's kind of odd to have them playing this character as babyfaces. I'm not sure if that's really working.
I think it would be hard for them. I think if they were heels, I think they'd get cheered. I do. I think that.
Yeah, I think they would have to be. I think they would have. They wouldn't be able to do the pre-tapes and the fashion files. They wouldn't be able to do that as heels. No.
Right. Yep. Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Dolph Ziggler tonight. I've noticed since this whole thing with Dolph Ziggler and Shinsuke Nakamura has started, WWE seems to be relying on Ziggler to push this feud or promote this feud verbally. He's doing most of the mic time, and I think we all know why they have him doing that. But I think if that's their plan going forward, is to have Nakamura's opponents do most of the talking. Because, I mean, Ziggler, I don't think anybody really cares what he has to say anymore. It's been so long, and I just don't think no one is interested in it. I feel like this has a short shelf life with this? I think people are going to want to expect more from Nakamura verbally on the microphone. Do you think, so what do you think of, you know, them have really relying so much on Ziggler to promote this feud between the two? And do you think it has excited anybody for the match at Backlash?
Greg, I think that Dolph's a perfect opponent for Nakamura for his first hyped match, his first match that's going to be televised on the SmackDown brand, but it's going to be on the pay-per-view. But I think Ziggler's the right guy. He's agitating, he's arrogant, he's whiny, and he's saying, I want to shut up Nakamura and show how overrated he is. I think it's a good setup for Nakamura to they're setting up the pins for Nakamura to knock down. I think at this stage, that's good. If Nakamura came in and immediately was all over Kevin Owens and they're having a beginning of a feud, I mean, you can do that too. But, I mean, I think there's something to be said for patience and a slow build. And Ziggler, I thought tonight was good, in part because he didn't yell at the top of his lungs at any point in his promo.
I like Ziggler, too, as an opponent for Nakamura, first off. And, yes, at some point, Nakamura is going to have to do more on the mic. I think there's a happy medium. I don't think he needs to be a guy who's out there cutting 15-minute promos at the beginning of SmackDown, whether or not he's champion. But I don't think they can also get away with having him talk as little as he's talked so far in this feud. Now, the thing to remember is this is his initial feud, and they're kind of bringing him along slowly, and I don't mind that. You know, I don't think they need to give away as much of Nakamura as they might otherwise right in this initial feud with Ziggler. I don't have a problem keeping him somewhat of a mystery, and that goes for the in-ring, too. They're holding off his first match till Backlash, making it seem special. They're not throwing him right into the wolves. They're kind of bringing him along slowly, and I like that.
Chris, anything else for us?
Last thing I want to bring up is Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton. As far as Randy's concerned, I'm watching this feud, and I think you brought up something about is he a guy who can carry the show as the top babyface, and I think he's just doing a really bad job at it. I think he could. I just don't think Randy Orton cares. I feel like when he came back from injury last year, it was like he had a little burst of energy. He seemed like he was doing a good job, but as months went by, his performances have become very Dean Ambrose-like. They've been lackluster. They haven't been good. He seems uninspired. And I don't know how... Honestly, I think Jinder has been doing a much better job at making this feud between them two feel important or interesting. You know, Jinder, he's an okay wrestler. I think he makes a great heel. He has the potential to probably be the best heel right now, because he's the only guy who in the WWE probably gets any real heat, except if your name is Roman Reigns. So what do you think about that? Do you think that this feud has been good? Are either of you excited for the match at Backlash?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I appreciate it. I wouldn't say that anybody should be excited about a Jinder Mahal match or a Randy Orton match, Greg. I mean, they just have to... I mean, what we're hoping for is that they deliver a main event-worthy show-closing performance, assuming they close the show. I am curious to see if closing the show on a pay-per-view on WWE Network, biggest match of Jinder's life, and, you know, I don't think Randy cares. I mean, I don't think Randy acts like he's got nothing to prove to anybody. And does Jinder have enough clout to get something more than a B-minus match out of Randy? Probably not. So, I mean, excited is the wrong word. That's setting the bar too high. But I would say I'm intrigued to see if Jinder just eats an RKO out of nowhere and loses in the end. And then he just kind of moves down two spots, you know, and is a fourth heel on the roster, give or take. And just kind of settles there, or if they're going to try to extend this feud a month, or add some fire to it. But man, we say paint by numbers about the booking of the show. This is very Jinder Mahal is very much a paint by numbers heel, and I mean even as when he walked out and did the mic work at the beginning of the show or near the beginning, it was like you couldn't even hear him. You know, he doesn't know to hold the mic closer to his mouth. He was way a decibel way lower than the others who were talking. Or volume-wise. And I don't know that I've seen anything yet where I've said, oh, yeah, this was good scouting by WWE. This guy's got money in him. You know, I don't know that he's a top heel. So excited is not the word, but intrigued to see if Jinder can step up. And if not, do we kind of blame Randy for holding him back from doing so?
And over the last few weeks, we've seen Jinder Mahal against Sami Zayn and AJ Styles now tonight. And, you know, I haven't really been impressed with either outing. And when you've got guys set up against you like Sami Zayn and AJ Styles, I think you're kind of expected to impress. And Mahal just hasn't done it for me. And I think if we're talking about Mahal, we're talking about the wrong guy to, quote-unquote, get something more out of Randy Orton on Sunday. I don't think he's the kind of guy that can do that just by watching his matches the last few weeks. And, you know, I think you're right, Wade, that you're just kind of more intrigued almost to see how the match goes, to see what the finish is. And, to, you know, they have the Singh brothers now associated with Jinder Mahal, so if they wanted to get another pay-per-view title match out of this, they've got their out for a wonky finish there by getting them involved. But as far as, like, a really good match, I don't see where that's going to come from. You know, seeing how they've been the last few weeks, I don't see where that really good match is going to come from.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we'll take more calls and continue with Greg Parks. I'm Wade Keller. This is the PW Torch Livecast, Tuesday night edition following SmackDown on May 16th, 2017. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Greg, what have you got on tap for Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter subscribers and PW Torch VIP members with your column this week? And I'm going to turn your mic on, because if I don't, it's going to be really boring for our listeners. Yes.
And boring for me, too, listening to myself talk. I do that all day. So, coming up, you know, in December, I took a look at NXT and how the buzz had kind of worn off that weekly television show, as good as the TakeOver events were still. And the last few weeks, really, since TakeOver Orlando, there's been a lot more buzz around the shows. Yeah. Even with losing Shinsuke Nakamura and the Revival in the post-WrestleMania call-ups, these NXT TV shows have been better, and they've been getting more buzz. And I wrote the column looking at why that is, what the difference is from December when I wrote my initial column to now, and what changes in personnel have been made to maybe lead to that conclusion, but also what they're doing different on NXT TV itself.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to TakeOver on Saturday, too. Yeah, not to steal any thunder from your column, but I agree. I think they've done a really nice job with Roderick Strong, getting something more out of him than I think some people thought they might. Drew Galloway, I'm a fan of his presence and what he's been doing. Cassius Ohno. I mean, it's just like there's some new blood, some new energy. It's a good time if you've been an NXT viewer and tuned out because you started to feel it's getting a little repetitive, even if I like the wrestlers. I like the format. I like the structure. I wasn't crazy last week about Regal. They don't overdo it on gimmick matches, but just making the tag title match a ladder match for no reason. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that. I think NXT is a little more dignified than that, to be just gimmicky for the sake of insecurity over whether people want to see a straight up match. But overall, I'm looking forward to TakeOver, and I think it's good timing to write that column, because I think there is something there worth exploring. So, if you're not a subscriber to the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, you can get it home delivered. Just go to pwtorch.com/papercopy. That's pwtorch.com/papercopy, and that'll tell you all about the newsletter. It's delivered every week with exclusive columns, news, match reports, my cover story, my end notes editorial, pay-per-view roundtable reviews from the Torch staff, my Raw and SmackDown reports, and more. You can also get digital versions of it with a VIP membership. Details on that at pwtorch.com/govip. So pwtorch.com/papercopy or pwtorch.com /govip for information on our digital subscription, which includes over a dozen VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free, plug-free versions of this PW Torch livecast. All right, back to the phone lines we go. Let's go to Kylan from New Jersey. Kylan, we missed you while you were gone. Good to have you back. Glad things are going better for you. What's on your mind tonight?
My first question for this week, Wade, concerns Sami Zayn. Do you think that Sami Zayn will eventually earn a bigger push after this feud with Baron Corbin is over? Or do you think, for some reason, Vince McMahon only sees him as, no disrespect intended, but a Barry Horowitz-level enhancement talent?
I sure hope he sees him as more than that, Kylan. But, I mean, hey, throw it to Greg. Greg, what do you think? Is Sami Zayn, the way that he's being portrayed and framed right now, is that a sign he is at the level he's going to stay? Or is this just Vince kind of figuring out what the hook is about his personality and there's still an upside here?
I don't think he'll ever get to Barry Horowitz level. That's Kurt Hawkins territory, and I don't think Sami is headed that far down. But the fact that they've given him this gimmick where apparently he's annoying now is not a good sign for his immediate future. But I see him as a guy who I think he'll get a big push. I think WWE is thinking, you know, the fans are going to get behind him like they got behind Daniel Bryan. And I don't think that's going to happen. But I think at some point, if he's there long enough, if he's put in the time, excuse me, I think he's going to get a run at or near the top. I don't think it's going to be immediate. I don't think it's going to be next month. But I think he's a guy who, you know, he puts in a couple of years, and especially with the roster split, I think there's a better chance that, you know, a couple injuries here and there, and all of a sudden he's there. So, you know, like I said, in the immediate future, no, I don't think he's in for a much bigger push than this. But I think down the line, he could be a guy that if WWE trusts enough in and they've seen enough from him, that he could rise higher.
Yeah, Kylan, I'm not giving up on him yet. I understand people who are fans of his being nervous about how Vince is portraying him. I think we missed out on the earnest underdog character he played in NXT. Vince wasn't along for that ride, and he looks for something else in wrestlers he pushes, something more than that sports-like underdog storyline. We're going to wait and see. I mean, I think you have a right to be nervous. I don't think you have a reason to be Barry Horowitz-level nervous. And you know what? We know he's good. I'll say that too, Colin. We know how good Sami Zayn is. We know the really good promos he gave in NXT and prior. We know how good he is in the ring. We know the connection that he can make with fans. And like with Daniel Bryan, sometimes you can't stop that. And I think fans like Sami, and I think Sami's talented enough that he'll persevere even if Vince is kind of not getting it and tilting his head going, I'm not quite sure why the fans still like this guy, but since they do, I guess we'll push him. I think, you know, a year or so ago, we all thought he'd be in a better spot than he is right now, though.
I hope so. He certainly deserves it.
Yeah.
My second question concerns the SmackDown Women's Division and a possible alternative scenario for that.
Sure, yeah.
With WWE building up their relationship over the past couple of months, can you see Carmella possibly being a dark horse to win the women's championship, with the scenario being that Carmella and James Ellsworth continue to go along, and then eventually she starts losing, and then say around Royal Rumble or shortly thereafter, she gets sick of him costing her matches, and then we see a kind of a Shawn Michaels, Sherry Martel angle where she slaps him or accidentally kicks him in the face and they break up or something like that.
Well, Greg, what is the upside of Carmella, and what do you think of what you saw tonight against Naomi?
I didn't think much of it. She's still got a long way to go in the ring. She's kind of this mid-card, lower-card, even for the women's roster, character with James Ellsworth. I think it's probably good for a few cheap laughs, but if you're talking Royal Rumble, you're projecting a long way out, and it's so hard to say what's going to happen there. I don't see Carmella, though, when you've got Becky Lynch, when you've got Charlotte, when you've got Natalya, even Tamina, if they wanted some fresh blood in the women's title chase, I would say Carmella's behind all of them as far as credibility in getting a title shot.
I'm way more sold on Alexa Bliss than Carmella. And during, the ramp up of their pushes, even prior to the Superstar Shakeup, I don't know that, or going all the way back to NXT. I mean, I don't think either of them stood out as, oh, they're going to be centerpiece women on the main roster in the middle of 2017. Alexa's really risen and shined. I have not been disappointed in Carmella's character, her performance, her dynamic with James Ellsworth. I don't think that she's been bad in the ring, but she's not good enough where you go, well, I mean, yeah, you can main event, you can have semi, co-main events with her on television. She doesn't have that level of presence. She doesn't come across as tough enough or badass enough that she's really fighting for that to come through. That's something that Charlotte has going for. And Becky Lynch actually has going for. They have that sense of there's a fight going on. Carmella feels more like a throwback to the Diva era, and that's something she has to work hard to overcome. But again, I don't mean to kind of, be hedging a little bit on this, but I mean, I think she's earning her keep, Greg. I think she's doing a good enough job as number two or number three heel in a relatively shallow women's division, but they're going to have to lean on her more because, I like Natalya, but Natalya's been defined at a certain level, and I don't think people expect that she's going to change a lot from where she is, and Tamina's so green that, Carmella, they're depending on her stepping up and being able to fill more TV time in a way that fans care about than I think most people projected at this point she'd be asked to do. As for the James Ellsworth
thing,
though,
need to add.
Oh, go ahead, Greg. I'm sorry. I pause there. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say we need to add the caveat that the women's division is very thin, so there's always a chance that Carmella gets pulled up to a title feud for a month or two, and maybe even gets a title run for a month or something like that. But I guess as far as having this grand scheme where she ends up breaking up with James Ellsworth and she goes on to win the title and have this long reign, I don't think that's in the cards.
I agree. Just watched Austin Aries throw a shirt at or TJ Perkins and Austin Aries start their match by throwing clothes at each other. It's always, you always know you're in for a good fight when someone's t-shirt goes flying into someone's face. kind of live watching 205 Live as we go here. All right, Colin, I'm kind of thinking you got a number three for us. Topic number three.
Final question. How long do you foresee AJ Styles chasing Kevin Owens for the U.S. title, since I do not foresee him winning it right away?
Greg, what do you think?
I think the switch that they did with Owens and Jericho and then back to Owens on SmackDown, I think that makes it less likely Styles wins on Sunday. Whereas if they didn't have Jericho win it for that 2 days, I think it would have been more up in the air. But I don't think you want to hot potato the belt that much over that short a period of time. And, that's something I'm kind of keeping my eye on. And you're keeping one eye on the Orton Mahal situation, seeing how the finish plays out there. If Orton goes over clean and there's really no way Mahal has an argument for another title match, I mean, then you look to Owens and Styles. Because the big rumored summer program was Styles versus Orton. Of course, now Orton is babyface and Styles turned babyface. So that doesn't really seem to connect. Right. Owens is United States champion, probably not going to challenge Orton for the WWE title. So you kind of look around and see what's left. And Owens versus Styles, I think, would be a fine long-term program, multi-month program. But then you're left with Orton, and certainly some question marks from there.
What do you think of the hashtag dive controversy on social media? For those who aren't familiar with it, I very much encourage you to check out pwtorch.com. We've got a summary of the Twitter exchanges. Rip Rogers retweeting, I believe, one of his students, one of the local wrestlers, talking about today's indie style, disparaging it for being formulaic and splashy without substance, and kind of pandering to fans for chance. Orton retweeted it and said hashtag dives or no dives or whatever. He was mocking all the dives that indie wrestlers are doing these days. And then he added his own little diatribe, which was an apology for retweeting an insulting dissertation on indie wrestling, only to be probably more insulting in the process of the apology. And then we had a variety of wrestlers sound off publicly. CM Punk, EC3, Low Key. Taking a variety of perspectives. Ricochet. It was quite the conversation piece. I'm not a fan of the word trolling, because I think sometimes it takes people off the hook for, it's sort of a passive-aggressive way of expressing an opinion. Well, I didn't really mean it. I was just looking for a reaction. I think you own what you say, and I think Randy needs to own what he says. And the thing is I don't entirely disagree with, there's a lot I don't disagree with on both sides. There's a lot I agree with on both sides, but I don't disagree with everything on both sides. I think there's kind of a middle ground for them. And so I'm kind of curious how it plays out. But before I throw it to you for your thoughts on all this, Greg, I want to add this to the mix. What a perfect setup for Randy against AJ. That's what brought it on, you know, with you talking about how there was talk of those two having a feud. What if this turned out, and there's no way it was planned the way it played out, but what if it leads to Randy Orton being kind of the anti-AJ, the anti-indie guy, and they use that as a foundation for a feud, and it kind of propels Randy into, I think, a more natural role, which is a snarky, self-entitled heel.
I don't know if you saw it, but just as our show was going on here, Wade, there was a picture tweeted out by Drew Gulak, who had the no-fly zone sign backstage, which that's his character on 205 Live, and he was posing next to Randy Orton with the no-fly zone sign. So Randy certainly doubling down on his comments there.
Yeah.
It does not surprise me that Orton has this stance. You know, we talked at length already tonight about his in-ring style. It's not surprising that he would be on that side of the argument. Mm-hmm. But I also think, you know, here's a guy who, you know, and I think it's a little too much to say, you know, kind of born on third base, that sort of thing, because I'm sure he did work very hard, even though he was born into the business, even though he, was the youngest champion for the longest time there in WWE. It would appear to a lot of people from the outside that he had a lot of stuff handed to him. So for him to be the one to stand up and make these comments, I think whether or not it's fair portrays him in a bad light, because people know how he got to where he did when he's criticizing the guys who have to scrape and claw to make a living, which he really didn't have to do on the independent scene.
Well, and that's the thing. The idea, it's Randy Orton worked hard to get what he has. But when he was, like, I'll just use this analogy. When he was digging for the treasure of a WWE job with seven-figure paydays, he was digging for treasure because he knew if he dug, he'd get treasure. All these indie guys are working really hard, digging for treasure, and they have no clue where the treasure chest is, or if there will be one where they're digging. So, yes, Randy worked hard. He worked hard to get the treasure of a push, becoming a multimillionaire, becoming a TV star. He worked hard for it. He had to dig to get the treasure. But there's a lot of indie guys who are digging. They're working hard, but they don't know that they're going to get a job. They don't know that they're going to have the connection. They don't know they're going to be even noticed or given a break if they are noticed. That's the difference. And for Randy to disparage that and then to not understand that indie wrestling is different than WWE style. It has to be. because it doesn't have the appeal of the glitz, glamour, big budget major league that WWE has in their brand. So for indie wrestling to draw fans, they have to give people a intimate rock concert experience. Not a stadium show with the best of hits, but that really cool, intimate nightclub, rock club experience, rock concert experience. And that includes a bunch of young, athletic, usually smaller guys doing incredible stuff that fans pay to sit close and see. And that's different than Randy's job. He's criticizing a fireman for not doing a cop's job. You know, I mean, an indie wrestler has a different audience, and it's a different setting. There's different expectations. And it just felt really unfair, and I thought real narrow-minded on his part and kind of mean. You know, the amount of money that he has and being a third-generation wrestler and knowing if he worked hard, he'd get a break. I just thought it didn't reflect well on him. I thought indie guys who respect him are going to go, oh, that's Randy being Randy. But I think it came across as small on Randy's part. And I think it was character revealing about his perspective. So I was disappointed in him, even if I agree to a certain extent with his message that, yes, indie wrestling has to stand out, but I think there is too much pandering for this is awesome chance and fight forever. And I think that ultimately is less effective than telling a good story in the ring that isn't about the fans evaluating the choreography, but instead getting into the protagonist and antagonist in the plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go to our next break. When we come back, I want to look at the 10 years ago SmackDown and also take some more calls. So if you haven't gotten on the phone banks yet, you can call us 515-605-9345. 515-605-9345. When you do call, whether you called already or you're about to call, after you dial up and hit our switchboard, push 1 on your touchtone phone to move into the caller standby mode. Otherwise, we will not be able to bring you onto the show. All right, and we'll be back right after this message. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Greg Parks, longtime Pro Wrestling Torch columnist in this week's edition of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which will be mailed to print subscribers tomorrow afternoon and become available in digital PDF and alt-text format to our VIP members online tomorrow. He writes about NXT and a little resurgence here, a spark in interest in the show and in the quality of the show in recent weeks compared to the close of 2016. For many years, Greg covered SmackDown for PWTorch.com with weekly reports. Greg, I can't remember. It was some odd number. How long did you cover SmackDown? How many years and months was it?
It was almost 10 years, right, exactly, actually.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I was being sarcastic. You're supposed to go 10 years on the nose.
Oh. Yeah.
Just me. All right. I love when my jokes just fall flat. So 10 years ago, Edge came out for his inaugural address, introducing himself to the SmackDown audience. I guess there was a draft right before that, Greg. And said he's not scared of Batista because he did in 3 seconds what Batista couldn't do in 3 months. He beat The Undertaker. And Batista came out, got a Batista chant. I said Batista was very dapper. He's always the best-dressed man on any wrestling show he's on. He welcomed Edge to SmackDown. And he said, since you're new, I'm going to tell you the same thing I told Undertaker. That title belongs to me. I'm sorry, but Sunday, I'm going to be needing it back. And I was a man of few words. And I said in my, you can read these back issues of The Torch, by the way, as a VIP member. You can go back and read my reports on all these shows in the newsletter. A good final segment with Edge and Batista. Nothing too fancy, but the basics work sometimes. And then I put in parentheses, usually, actually. The basics usually work. It's kind of how we've been talking about this week's television. I don't think it was a particularly controversial Raw or SmackDown, but kind of like I wrote about the 10 years ago angle with Edge and Batista, just good basic stuff. You know, set up Edge as the antagonist, set up Batista with a mission, make him more likable, set up fans wanting to see Batista beat Edge, and sell a pay-per-view match. What do you recall about the rise of Edge as a top heel on SmackDown and Batista at this stage as a babyface, Greg?
You know, Edge on SmackDown, I mean, he was SmackDown during that era. It was not, you know, the era of the SmackDown 6 in 2002, where they had, you know, so many big contributors, where they had a strong lineup up and down the card. I mean, it was Edge and a cast of thousands, it felt like. So he was, you know, with Batista here, obviously, but Edge had the longevity on SmackDown to really make himself the star of the brand. And I know he's remembered a lot for his Rated R Superstar stuff, especially on Raw, the live sex show with Lita. I mean, when he got really big on Raw, and that's a big part of his career that's remembered. But I think it was before that he was on SmackDown and then got moved to Raw when he got really hot, which is what tended to happen back in that time. You know, if you showed a lot of promise, if you got over really strong on SmackDown, boom, you were moved to Raw, and they took advantage of you there. Now it's a little more of an even playing field, but I mean, Edge, that's where he got noticed as that breakout star when he broke away from Christian and was on SmackDown.
Yes, absolutely. And Greg, as I looked over these results before the show, what jumps out to me is nobody on this show is on the show now. Like, they've had 100% turnover. Now, there's a couple, wrestlers who are on Raw right now. Can you name one or two of them who are on the show who are on Raw right now off the top of your head, unless you're looking at the results?
No, I'm not. I'm not looking at the results. I'm assuming Matt Hardy is one of them.
Yes, good. And one more.
It's an active wrestler on Raw?
Yes. Yep.
Names escape me right now.
All right, we won't make you struggle anymore. Mike the Miz, Mizanin.
Oh, okay. Yep, that makes sense.
Yeah, he beat Christian York in 2 minutes. So, anyway, I mean, MVP beat Matt Hardy in the opener. JBL is a presence on the show at this point as color commentator with Michael Cole. Should add that. Paul London, Brian Kendrick, and Jimmy Wang Yang beat Chavo Guerrero, Deuce, and Domino. Mark Henry beat poor Funaki. I put that in the report. Chris Benoit beat Finlay. And Kane with Boogeyman and Little Boogie defeated William Regal with Taylor in his corner. you know, we talk about the depth of SmackDown we talk about the depth of the rosters right now. This wasn't a particularly deep roster for SmackDown at this point in the roster split.
No, you know, that's kind of why I said it was almost like it was Edge and a cast of thousands.
Yeah, exactly,
you had you know, Chris Benoit, who was a little miscast, I think, at that time. The Miz and MVP, it's funny you mentioned that. It was MVP and Matt Hardy who had that really fun feud going back and forth where it was almost the anything you can do, I can do better type of deal they had, where they had the basketball game, the one-on-one basketball game, I think, on SmackDown at 1.2. So that was a long feud for a SmackDown TV feud and a good one. Regal and Taylor, I think they were underutilized as a tag team. Deuce and Domino, they're kind of the Breezango of their time, where it was the heavy gimmick tag team, although they did, I think, get a run with the tag team titles on SmackDown as well. So, it wasn't a banner time on SmackDown by any stretch.
And then there was one big moment on this show that was a rock concert performance. Speaking of rock concerts, do you recall who might have been the very big name on this episode? I shouldn't do this to you, Greg.
Like an actual
big time rock
singer?
Star. Yes.
I remember Ozzy Osbourne did a show one time. Was that this one?
It was this week, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I said, in a funny, freakish scene, Jillian Hall practically assaulted Ozzy Osbourne backstage, insisting she's a great singer. Security briskly moved on past her. After the break, Ashley oversmiled and overenthused her way through an introduction to Ozzy. He appeared on stage with a big lit up Ozzy lettering above him, and he and his band performed I Don't Want to Stop. Lots of pyro and other effects. I said it's a pretty catchy song for that genre. For a second, I thought Ozzy was actually Bret Hart on stage. The resemblance is actually closer than you would think at this point. So there we go. I gave a thumbs up to the Ozzy performance, and I said it gave SmackDown a special feel on this week. And then we also had the infamous Teddy Long Crystal angle going on. Teddy interviewing Vicky Guerrero at that point for assistant GM, and then Crystal later telling Teddy that he appreciates her interviewing Vicky. And then in walked Vicky. She hugged Crystal, who then excused herself. She made a pitch to Long, and she said she wants to change the perception of the Guerreros, and she kissed up to Teddy by talking about how special Crystal is and how she can't stop talking about him. So we had that storyline going on. So fun stuff, just kind of a nice little snapshot of where WWE was 10 years ago this week. So you can read all kinds of stuff in that 10 years ago back issue. If you look it up as a VIP member, over 1,500 back issues are available when you're a VIP member. The headline that this week in the newsletter, by the way, was Michaels, the latest to go down with injury. Also, Gregory Helms, which makes the returns of Hunter and Mr. Kennedy vital. And I did a cover story kind of detailing where they stood in that respect and talked about CM Punk among the wrestlers who might benefit from the injuries. All right. Back to 2017 and back to the phone lines. Let's go to Jason in East Lansing, Michigan. Jason, welcome to the live cast. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, just touching base with you guys. Thanks for picking up. This was one of the few weeks actually that I thought Raw was better than SmackDown. So I was kind of surprised and disappointed. All I can figure is the Russians hacked the booking. You mentioned Randy Orton, and you know, is he able to carry this? And I don't know if you watched The Wire, the show on HBO, and there's a quote from there that Randy is, well, not that Randy, but it reminds me, he's like a 40-degree day. Nobody cares about it.
That's great. I love that. Yeah.
Look it up. It's a Stringer Bell quote, and it really suits him. The things that stood out to me for SmackDown, at least recently. I think Styles doing the favors for Jinder was huge. I was shocked when they actually booked that because I don't know what your guys' thoughts on that were, but I know they're trying to elevate Mahal, but that just seemed like an awful big giveaway for someone that's a main eventer. What do you guys think about that?
I think it was smart in that sense that it was very tainted. I mean, obviously. It wasn't a clean victory for Jinder. But once the decision is made that you're going to try to elevate Jinder Mahal post-superstar shakeup with Rusev not back, you've got a thin roster, and you're going to go with Jinder, you got to make some tough calls. And I think AJ, now you don't want to take for granted that he's bulletproof or Teflon, but he's really, really good. And losing to Jinder under tainted circumstances with a distraction and then a distraction and all that. I mean, I just don't think anybody looks at him and goes, oh, Jinder's better than AJ. But like JBL's quote at the end of the match, no matter by hook or crook, if you beat AJ Styles, it means you can beat anyone. And I think what they're selling isn't that Jinder's better than AJ. What they're saying is, will Jinder use these tactics against Randy on Sunday? If he can beat AJ with these tactics, maybe he's cunning enough to do the same thing to Orton. So I just think in terms of building up a match, I mean, it's kind of booking 101, and I didn't have a problem with it, but I think there's going to be some people who do and don't think that, you know, that they're going to argue AJ should be on more protected turf and they should have put somebody else in that spot. I just don't know who that somebody else is at this point. Greg, your thoughts?
I thought the win was going to be – I thought Mahal would win because he needed it. I thought it was going to be a little more tainted than it actually was. You know, he was able to hit his finisher and get the pin on Styles. Not so much because, Styles should be protected more than he is, but, you know, Styles is facing Kevin Owens for the United States Championship on Sunday. And I thought they would have protected the title challenger a little more, even in giving Mahal the win. So – I tweeted about this during the show. I was a little surprised. Again, not that Mahal won, but yes, there was a distraction. But I was thinking, okay, maybe Mahal wins by DQ, or maybe, you know, it's a more of a slip on a banana peel finish than it actually was, where Mahal actually got to hit his finisher and got to pin Styles with it. So. But it just shows you, I think, how WWE views Mahal and that they needed to give him this real last-second boost of credibility by putting him over one of the most credible wrestlers on the SmackDown roster in AJ Styles.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason. Yep,
I'm sorry, what Greg just said there, and that's something that I think is a real issue, having to do these last-second boosts as opposed to, you know, what they do with Strowman, where they just stay the course and you know, do 13 weeks of TV and book these guys out, and as opposed to, you know, having a goldfish mentality where, you know, they're changing direction, it seems, from 1 hour to the next. You know, actually just build and build. And I can't imagine that. I believe a thrust of this is going to India. But that's not a business decision I think they made overnight. So they could have, and you've addressed this, instead of letting, you know, Mahal lose like crazy over on Raw, give him some small victories, you know, not just doormat him the whole way. It's just amazing that I think it seems like McMahon has gone back to his old bad habits prior to Monday Night Wars, is how it looks to me. And without the competition, he's not forced to do anything else.
Greg, what's your take
on that? I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, Greg, your assessment of that take.
Well, you know, I'm not going to sit here and defend WWE's booking of Jinder Mahal as far as, you know, just doing a complete reset on SmackDown and basically ignoring the character he was on Raw and ignoring the losses that he piled up on Raw and almost putting on a fresh coat of paint on SmackDown and presenting him as something new. You know, I'm not going to defend that booking, but on the other hand, you know, things change, things come up where you may need to pull a guy up for whatever reason, whether it's injury, in this case, WWE, whatever you want to believe, whether that you want to believe that WWE is rewarding Jinder Mahal for getting into shape and dedicating himself to the gym and doing what he needs to do to get noticed, or whether it's WWE wanting to increase its presence in India and wanting to push a guy with that heritage, or maybe it's a little of both. I can certainly see why WWE did what they did, but yes, of course, would I prefer to see someone follow the Braun Strowman path, where they're built up for weeks winning quick squash matches, and then, you know, they beat a couple mid-carders, and then they're in the main event? Sure. But WWE wanted a main eventer quickly, and there wasn't a lot of time to get Mahal built up.
Jason, any closing words for you?
Last thing. I'm going to be actually attending the Raw show in Grand Rapids next week. So,
great.
On my drive back to Lansing, I'll see if I can call in and, you know, just give a live report as far as what's you know, what's happening that you guys may not see there, and just give kind of a, you know, first account crowd reaction.
Oh, very good. Appreciate it, Jason. Drop me an email with a reminder on Monday too, so we know to look for your number.
Okay.
Cool.
No problem. And now leave room for the number one Jason, I'm sure, call in.
Thanks, yes. All right, Jason from East Lansing. We're going to go to break. When we come back, how did he know? Jason from Australia is up next. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Sad to hear the news of pretty boy Doug Summers dying at age 65. He had been having some health issues in recent years. Best known for his tag team title run in the AWA, the promotion that I grew up watching and also watched disintegrate before my very eyes. I was very sad to see that happen as the home team promotion, one of the big three of the 60s, 70s, and 80s before the AWA ended up going out of business. But they were on ESPN at the time. And Playboy Buddy Rose teamed with pretty boy Doug Summers, and it was an ironic name because Doug Summers was not a pretty boy. He was kind of the opposite of pretty boy. And he and Rose were really good workers, though. Summers was a journeyman wrestler, but a carpenter of the ring in that he was trusted to be in the right place at the right time. He took good bumps. He made his opponents look good. I'm curious to see what Shawn Michaels, if he does say anything publicly about him, and I haven't checked his Twitter feed or anything like that, but if Shawn has anything positive to say about what Doug meant to his progress as a worker, because the feud between Summers and Rose and the Midnight Rockers is the feud that put the Midnight Rockers on the map and really got people's attention in terms of Michaels' ability in the ring, both Michaels and Jannetty, and they had a bloody battle on ESPN that's regarded as a classic and among the most memorable of the AWA's time on ESPN in the 1980s. So our condolences to his family and friends, and just one of those unheralded workers who I don't believe ever did any dives, Randy Orton. He would have made you proud. All right, as I said, I'm with Greg Parks, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, and we're talking primarily about tonight's SmackDown. We also did a little bit of 10 years ago, a window into 10 years ago this week on SmackDown. By the way, tomorrow, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joins me for the midweek flagship. And then Thursday, Kevin Eck, one of my favorite guests on Interview Thursday, former creative team member with WWE. He's going to be on to do a preview of Backlash. And while we're at it, we might as well preview what's coming up next? Is it Extreme Rules after that or Money in the Bank? It's all getting to be a blur, Greg.
Money in the Bank is June, but it's a SmackDown show because Rusev was supposed to be on this show and wanted a title match by Money in the Bank, but Rusev was not on this show. So, and then Great Balls of Fire is July. Extreme Rules must be... is that the Raw show for June? And then Money in the Bank is the SmackDown show for June?
I'm so confused. I covered it on the Wade Keller hotline earlier for VIP members, and I'm still... It is... I mean, I do this for a living, and these pay-per-view titles, Payback, Kickback, Extreme Rules, Money in the... It's like it's starting to become kind of hard to keep track of. I mean, I know there's some people out there who, you know, they're just like, how can you not know? It's this, this, and this. It's like, because it's so many of them now. They're talking about multiple pay-per-views on each brand right now. At least they didn't introduce the term Great Balls of Fire on Raw last night. So, I don't know. We'll see, but we'll preview the next couple pay-per-views with Kevin Eck and talk about his days in WWE booking. He wrote a blog recently about 5 storyline ideas that got rejected, and that'll be fun to talk about those. They're somewhat outlandish. So we'll get Kevin Eck's opinion on those and what might have happened and a little maybe expand on the context a little bit on what he wrote. So join us tomorrow on the Midweek Flagship with Jason Powell, 1 Eastern if you want to join us live or else on demand later in the day. And then Thursday, Interview Thursday, 1 Eastern and on demand for most of you later in the day. Yesterday, Pat McNeil joined me for over an hour and a half for the post-Raw show. So lots of good content for free here at pwtorchlivecast.com and so much more when you go VIP. All right, Jason from Australia, you are up next. Jason, your thoughts on tonight's show.
Yeah, mate, I just wanted to comment. I've got Talking Smack going on in the background.
Yeah.
When you had Mahal, he's sitting down. He's got the Singh brothers right next to him. It's funny because Mahal sitting down is the same size in height as the Singh brothers standing up. It's just a great visual.
Wow.
I don't know with Mahal. I like this pairing of him with the Singh brothers. And I think Triple H is really behind this push because I think... I like the message they're sending. You know, Mahal got let go. He got himself into better shape. Okay, we all know that. But, you know, he came back with a good attitude. He did what they told him to do. And now they're giving him an opportunity. And I think that shows that even if you do get released from WWE, it shows that maybe in a couple of years' time, you know, don't drop your bundle. Come back and we'll give you an opportunity. I kind of like that message that they're sending there.
Giant news they just announced on Talking Smack. Luke Harper versus Eric Rowan has been announced. Just as you were talking, Jason, I've got closed captioning on, so I saw Shane giving the match he wants. I just don't know if we can go on. This is big news, Jason. I appreciate what you just said, but I think we need to stop and analyze the match that, according to overseas house show attendees who sent us reports, is a match that should never happen again because it's boring.
Wade, I am literally shaking. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to continue on. You know what, guys? You have a nice night there in the States. Lucky for me, I've got a whole day to recover with this news. I mean, this is amazing.
Although I do have to say, body language-wise, I'm kind of looking forward to watching this back with sound. Eric Rowan standing up, making weird faces, and Renee Young, not quite sure. Renee Young, she's doing Pat Benatar this week. She's got a Pat Benatar circa 85 look or something going on right now. I don't know what's going on. It's too distracting. I gotta stay focused, Jason. Greg, do you have a reaction to Jason's initial comments? Or Harper Rowan, for that matter, if you can't recover from that. Do I have you muted, Greg? I sure do. Man, I'm going to find myself $50 for that one. Go ahead.
We may need to rename this show the post-Eric Rowan versus Luke Harper analysis show, because I think that's all we're going to talk about from here on out, trying to get to the bottom of this one. I have nothing to add about that. But for what Jason said, you know, I think the idea that WWE is pushing someone new, I think that's why you're not seeing a lot of pushback by fans from this. Jinder Mahal is certainly not the guy that a lot of fans would have picked for WWE to have plucked out of mid-card obscurity and to reward with a title shot. But fans are not wanting to, you know, say, why Jinder Mahal? This is terrible. No one believes him in this role. I think it's just that fans for so long have clamored for something new on top, and now they're finally getting it, only it's Jinder Mahal. So they kind of have to take their medicine here. They can't really complain much, because then they'd be complaining, oh, WWE's attitude would be, well, you complain that we're not trying anything new on top, and then when we do, you complain about that. So, yes, I enjoy that WWE is going a different route and putting Jinder Mahal on top and trying something new. I think in this era of guaranteed money given out for television contracts, in this era of not having to sell secondary pay-per-views as much, I mean, that's why they did a paint-by-numbers build-up show tonight to Backlash. That's why they're running with Jinder Mahal in a WWE title match. They're not trying to sell $55 worth of pay-per-views to 2 million viewers at home anymore. They're trying to sell network subscriptions, and the pay-per-view now is such a small part of that. So they can take a few more risks, but also, when it comes to build-up, they don't really have to do as much.
Jason, what else have you got for us? If you've recovered from Harper and Rowan and the announcement.
Like I said, it's, what is it, 11:12 my time, so I've still got a whole day to sort of get over it. I don't know why I remember this, but, I don't know why I remember this, but I only watched one season of Tough Enough, right? And that was the first one. And I remember Triple H, when he came in and he spoke to all the class, and he asked him a question. And he said, you know, if you don't make it here in the W, if you don't get caught up, what are you going to do? And a lot of them said, oh, look, I'm going to go back and do this job, or I'm going to go here, I'm going to do there, do something else. And Triple H said, you know, that's not the answer that I wanted. If you don't get in the first time, I wanted to hear you're going to work your ass off and do whatever you can to come back here.
Yeah.
Go on the independent circuit, do this, do that, but eventually you will find your way back in WWE. So that's why I think he respects Mahal and he respects Drew Galloway for having that attitude and coming back. And I feel like he feels like he wants to reward that. So like I said, I like that message they're sending. As far as Randy Orton is concerned with AJ Styles, look, if I'm one of these independent wrestlers, why do I care what Randy Orton thinks? You know, why is everyone making a big deal out of this? I mean, he puts out a comment, that's what he believes in, big deal. You do your thing, he does his. And if they go down the path of Randy Orton versus AJ Styles, I hope they don't reference the whole indie thing. To me, AJ Styles is not an independent wrestler. He is a larger-than-life superstar. If they go down that feud, I hope they don't reference that, because I don't want to go back to that whole CM Punk or I wasn't given opportunities and all the rest of it. That's got such a limited audience. Do we really have to go down that path again?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, AJ Styles should be framed as a larger-than-life superstar as opposed to an indie scene guy. And at some point, that is kind of limiting. Now, that said, it still could be part of AJ speaking to Randy about that they're both of the same generation age-wise, but AJ took a very different path to get to where he is than Randy Orton did. And nobody had heard of him until he signed with WWE. He didn't have the advantage of his dad. I mean, there are stories that you can tell there that I think they can make work. But the idea that they portray, you know, AJ as something other than a global established superstar, I think would be a step back for AJ. So it has to be handled delicately.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you had done this when AJ first debuted in WWE, you could get away with it a little more, because the whole story when he first debuted in WWE is, here's this, you know, worldwide known wrestler, but he was sort of tagged as this indie guy who'd never made it to WWE. And the whole storyline was, well, yeah, he's gotten all these championships and gotten all these accolades outside of WWE. But until you do it in WWE, you haven't done it. And even the announcers were preaching that. So I think if you were to run this, it would have been better to run it when he first debuted and he still had, you know, they were still telling that story. Whereas now, he's a WWE guy. You know, he's in now. He's been champion. It's been, you know, a year and a half since he's been in WWE. They don't talk about that anymore. He is, like you guys were saying, that larger than life. He's a WWE superstar now. He's made it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Jason, what else?
Sami Zayn's, well, he didn't really cut a promo. He just spoke in a casual way backstage. Now, I reckon Sami Zayn, he has these type of segments nailed. You know, one of the criticisms of a lot of these wrestlers is that, and it's not pretty much their fault, they all sort of speak in the same way, same inflection, pause at the right time, do this, and they talk a bunch of words that no one would use in real life. But Sami Zayn, what are you saying about Baron Corbin? I'm listening to him, I'm thinking, you know what, you're exactly right. And he's just talking like we're having a casual conversation. It's that he's got that down pat. So I really hope they stick with that and not go back to the annoying traits. I thought he was going to do an interview and stuff, you know, talking about being pedantic about this or whatever, but he spoke the truth, and it sounded really good. So I hope they stick that with him.
Jason, are you worried about Sammy? Kylan called earlier and is wondering if he's becoming Barry Horowitz. Is he going to be just kind of a joke who is just, I mean, Barry Horowitz, Greg and I agreed, is overstating it, but are you worried about where he's going to be in 6, 12, 18 months, given what we're seeing of Vince McMahon's vision of him right now?
All right, so he faces Baron Corbin. He's not going to win that feud. Baron Corbin's going to win that feud. Then what's next? Does he go for the United States title? AJ's probably going to beat Owens, you would think. You know, he might. Well, we don't know that, because maybe AJ's going to be pushed to the world title scene with Orton. Or maybe Mahal, we don't know. But like I said, what's next for Sami Zayn? Does he go into a feud with Dolph Ziggler? Like, how many feuds is he going to lose? Do we see a world title shot with him coming up in the future? I don't know. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on him for at least a couple of years. I can see him maybe having like one of those off-brand pay-per-view, getting a world title shot by falling short. No, I think he's got enough likable traits, and I think people will stick with him. I don't think he's going to fall down and be like a lower mid-card guy like a Barry Horowitz. I always see him being in the mid-card to upper mid-card, but I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on him not until a couple of years.
Sure. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think you've got a pretty good handle on it, Jason. I mean, I think Sammy's going to be a longer, slower build. But I do think he's good enough, and he has shown a connection to the fans, ability to connect with the fans, that in WWE, you tend to get rewarded for that if you stick it out and the fans are on your side. And I think there's something about Sammy that the typical wrestling fan likes. And it drives Vince nuts, but they do. And so I'm more bullish on I'm more optimistic, I should say, on Sammy's upside at this point than some, even with his.
You know what I do like the idea, and I think you talked about a few months ago where you said that if you want to, and I know they're on separate brands, but if you want to turn Braun Strowman babyface, if Sami Zayn's getting the crap beaten out of him, Strowman comes out to save him. I like that idea. And then I even like a tag team of that sort. You know, like a tag team where Sami Zayn's a smaller guy, he's got the bigger guy, and they could be tag team champions for a while. You know, like that dynamic between Kane and Daniel Bryan. And you could actually work that to try and get Sami Zayn to that next level. So you never know. But they've got a couple of things up their sleeve, I think, there.
Very good. Jason, really appreciate the call, as always.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You sound disappointed, Jason. Are you thinking of Harper?
No, I'm not disappointed. I've just...
I knew it.
I think we're running this into the ground. I think we've got to bail out on this joke, hey?
Bow out on the what? On the joke?
On this joke, this Harper Rowland thing. I think we're running it into the ground. I think now I think we've got the point. Harper and Rowland, it's going to go on forever. We're all excited about it, but I think it's time to bail out and end it now.
All right, I'll take your advice. No more Harper Rowland jokes, Jason. Thank you. That applies to you too,
thanks.
Greg.
I'm not nearly ready to give up on Harper Rowland jokes. The entire time Jason from Australia was talking, I was writing down more Harper Rowland jokes on note cards. So I'm going to go all night, Wade.
Save them. Save them for Twitter. You can get yourself over on Twitter.
Okay.
All right, let's go to air code 864 next after our next break. We'll get one more break in, do one more segment, and take some more calls. So hold tight while we listen to this message.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at RingRustRadio and email us at RingRustRadio@yahoo.com.
All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Greg Parks, and we're talking SmackDown. So let's go to air code 864 next. 864, who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Wade, it's Charles from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Hey, Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, I didn't even know I was in the host queue. Let's see what I got. The only thing I was thinking about is what you thought about the Usos promo. Like, I mean, the crowd wasn't into it, but I felt like they had really good energy. But I guess there's something about them that's, like, not really getting over because the crowd was really quiet. I guess that's all I got for tonight.
Charles, well, yeah. I appreciate bringing that up. I think it's definitely a talking point. We've waited years and years and years and years, for it feels like, for the Usos to get a chance to show what I've always heard they have, which is personalities. And I do not understand why it took so long. I'm not in love with what they're doing, but I really like that they're doing it. And what I mean by that is it's probably going to look different in 4 or 5 weeks. They're trying it. It's sort of like Fashion Police. They're trying some new things. They're giving them some mic time. There is energy. I like that they're not standing in the middle of a ring with a microphone. Like, the more there's promos that are not people standing in the middle of the ring with a microphone, I like that too. They're in a different setting. There's a weird cadence to what they do that isn't Enzo and Cass like. It's not Road Dogg Billy Gunn like. It's different, and I think maybe on purpose they're trying to keep people kind of on edge with the way that they go back and forth. But I give what they've done on the microphone so far a thumbs up, Greg, with some reservations like Charles has, that it seems like maybe something isn't quite refined yet on where they're going to land. But I would say after just doing this a few times, I'm endorsing that they're doing it, and I think it's helping get their personalities over. Are they coming across, Greg, as heelish enough in what they say? Or the initial criticism of this was it maybe was a little too clever, and it seemed like they were actually unwittingly bringing the crowd along with them to kind of react to what they were saying?
I thought that the Usos really got over well as baby faces. I think what they did as baby face, I thought they had a good baby face run.
Yeah.
I think they turned heel at the right time. I think they did need something different. I think the baby face Usos had run its course. So I like the timing of the heel turn. I like what they've done. I like what they've done on the mic. They brought energy. You talk about them not standing in the center of the ring and cutting a promo. I think we see why. They have that energy on the way to the ring where they're constantly moving. They're constantly throwing their bodies around while they're talking, and that doesn't fit the in-ring promo. So I'm glad WWE has taken it upon themselves to give them a different direction for that. I think, unfortunately, the tag team division and being a tag team is what's holding them back as much as anything else. We've seen the tag team division on SmackDown really struggle to get any kind of traction since the roster split. You had Heath Slater and Rhino were over for a very short time as a tag team, but American Alpha debuted for a number of reasons. They haven't been able to get off the ground. The Usos' heel turn hasn't taken, but that could take a while. The fans are still getting used to the Usos' heels. They're just like the Usos are trying to find their niche as a character. It's a feeling out process with the fans as well. So it goes both ways. But so far, I think in general, I like what I've seen from the heel Usos.
All right. Up next, Cody from Thibodaux, Louisiana. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight, Cody?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not too much. Just talking SmackDown.
Cool. So I wanted to get your opinion on the women's division tonight.
Yeah.
I thought they came across as really strong as opposed to the Raw women's division, which I sent an email for the midweek flagship about my frustrations with the women's division on Raw. But I want to know, do you think that the Raw women's division needs to learn something from the SmackDown women's division in terms of how to promote their programs?
Greg, yeah, we haven't talked a lot about talked about Carmella. I like the contract signing segment tonight. Everybody kind of got their turn to talk, but it made more sense in a contract signing setting. Your thoughts on what they did tonight with the women, what Cody had to say, and that little pivot at the end of Charlotte looking at Naomi going, after we win on Sunday, I'm coming after your title. And Naomi saying, bring it on.
Yeah, I wasn't as strong on the contract signing or the division in general as we saw it tonight. We've talked about how this show was generally paint by numbers. This was certainly that, I think. And if you even take the in-ring portion of the show into account, this was probably a below average show for leading up to Backlash with a very paint by numbers hype, not a lot to get excited about from this show for Backlash. And you look at the matches we saw tonight, and there really wasn't much as far as really strong in-ring content, and that includes Naomi versus Carmella, which stretched over two segments, which was somewhat of a surprise. But the Charlotte turn, I think the jury's still out on that. And really, you mentioned her look at Naomi at the end. I think the jury's out on whether that's even a long-term turn. I think it could be, or it wouldn't surprise me if she was kind of baiting the baby faces into a false sense of security and turning on them when the time arises. It wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. But the heel side is not really strong. You look at Tamina, you look at Carmella, even Natalya, who, Wade, you mentioned earlier in the show, has kind of been defined in a certain role on SmackDown. It's going to be tough for her to break out from that. You've got Becky Lynch, who is pretty strong. Charlotte, but we've seen Charlotte and Becky Lynch in so many incarnations on Raw, which is, I think, part of the reason Charlotte turned babyface, in addition to just evening out the sides. And Naomi is hit or miss, really. Her mic work isn't really strong. In the ring, she's athletic, but I don't think she's really put it all together as far as being an all-around in-ring worker. So, I'm not as high on the SmackDown Women's Division right now as some others, and I really wasn't as high on the segments we saw tonight either.
Cody, anything more?
I want to make a quick comment and another question, and then I'll let you guys get back to it. I agree with you and Jason from Australia that AJ Styles is a big-time worldwide known superstar, even more so to the fact that some of the wrestling moves, some of the dives and stuff that indie wrestlers use today, AJ Styles used to do, but he doesn't do them. He doesn't do much of them anymore, and he's kind of slowed down his pace in his matches. And I think he's found a really good balance for his mat work and his high flying style. But another question I wanted to ask was just a general question about backlash and how you guys will think it'll compare to Payback earlier in the month or even Extreme Rules in the future.
Did you catch that, Greg? It was a little choppy on my side.
Yeah, how we would compare the upcoming Backlash card with what we saw at Payback and compare it to the possible Extreme Rules card. I barely remember Payback, I'll be honest. These shows come so hot and heavy. We talked about earlier, not even knowing what shows are coming up. It's hard to remember. I think I really liked Payback. I liked it more than I gave it the highest roundtable score of anyone on the Torch, which is unusual for me. I'm usually on the lower end, I think, if I remember it correctly. So I really liked Payback. So, you know, with a presumed main event of Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal, I think Backlash has an uphill battle to compete with Payback, at least in my mind.
Cody, thanks. We're running short on time. I want to get one more caller in, but I appreciate hearing from you, and we'll talk to you next time, okay? We'll cover your question on the midweek.
No problem, guys. Have a good night.
Cool, thanks. Yep. All right, let's go to Mike Snoodian from Boston. Mike, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Greg. Hi, guys. Thank you for taking the call.
Absolutely.
Thanks for doing this for so late. So, really quick on this kind of struck from a couple callers. They've already done the AJ as the indie wrestler thing back during the Royal Rumble with Cena. And I would really don't want to see them go back to that again. I think that's kind of been done already. Getting back to Jinder Mahal, you can't go back and rewrite history and say, well, they should have pushed him sooner or done something with sooner. I mean, you can do that, but I think what you have to do is look at, from the time they've decided we're going to give him a little bit of a push, how has that worked from then until where they are today? And I think that Jinder himself as a character and also the creative team has actually done a pretty admirable job. I think from the time they decided to give him a little bit of a push, he's done pretty well with it overall, and they've pushed him right. He has wins over Zayn. He has wins over AJ Styles. He's looked good in the ring. I think he carries himself well. I think obviously
19 seconds.
Make him look like $1 million, but he sold really well for Mahal tonight. But Mahal also had, I thought, really commanding body language and facial expressions in the ring that really helped that out as well. So he did his part as well, having a world-class worker in there in the ring with him overall. So I like what I've seen from that overall. It's obviously you could go back and relitigate what they could have done in the months leading up to that, obviously. But from the
60 seconds,
this is what we're going to do. I think they've done a good job with it overall, so that should be commended, and you kind of hope to see more of that in the future with some better long-term planning leading up to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you learn from mistakes, and I think a mistake they made with Jinder is not building a foundation of believability that he's a world title contender sooner. But that said, this is the hand that's dealt, and they got to make the best of it. And I'm not saying Jinder's going to be a failure, but I also haven't seen enough, the last few weeks to go, wow, I mean, they really struck gold here. This was a gem that was, just waiting to be discovered on their right in front of their own face. And that's not the feeling I'm getting either. And that's where Sunday's going to be interesting, although I think the match we'll see tonight is probably more of a gift than Randy Orton will be in terms of letting Jinder shine.
Oh, of course.
But AJ made Jinder look like he is in the top tier. I wrote it in my SmackDown report on PWTorch.com tonight. I said that, Jinder didn't dazzle. He wasn't like, oh, this guy, this is the, Stone Cold Steve Austin breaking out as a top star. But he looked like he belonged in the ring with AJ. And not, he looked like, okay, this is okay. It doesn't seem weird. This seems like a reasonably competitive, reasonable match to have on SmackDown. And not everybody getting this kind of a push kind of out of nowhere would give that vibe off. And I think his facial expressions are getting better. I think what he does when he's not doing moves and not selling but just setting something up, it's getting better. And it feels big time compared to, three-man band. So, I mean, that's a given. I think he's showing that he's earned this push in, what is a May doldrum from a seasonal cyclical standpoint in pro wrestling. May is kind of a down period. And, this is a good time for this kind of thing. I like trying something like Jinder and trying to get something out of something that nobody thought you could get anything out of. I just wish they had planned ahead a little bit more.
Well, and the only thing I can do in terms of like a sports-like way of looking at the way Mahal is pushed is teams in sports go from worst to first, right? Something clicks,
yes.
You have, and often you have the same lineup, but they find something, they find that chemistry or whatever.
Like they find LeBron James.
And they're able to turn it on.
They find LeBron James. They find Steph Curry.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, the Singh brothers are Jinder Mahal's LeBron James.
Or they're Kevin Love and, yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. Getting to the women's division, I think, you know, like Greg, you had just said that it is thin, and you look at, you know, when Charlotte turned to Naomi and said, hey, I'm coming for that belt after, the first thing I thought is, like, if she captures the belt, who does she have a feud with? And how can you carry that? And I would be a proponent at this point. I love the brand split. I think it's a great thing. I do think there are too many titles. And what I would probably do at some point in the future is consolidate the tag team, the women's title, and the two world titles into one. Well, not obviously a women's champ and a men's champ in one title at that point. That would be silly. But having like one title across the brand, keep the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title unique to each brand and have that be your working title, but have the champion work both brands. Not necessarily the same week, not necessarily the same month, but if your champ is in a program with someone on SmackDown, he works SmackDown for that 1 month or 2 months that there's going to be there. That would give you a lot more teams to choose from for, say, the tag team. That would give allow the women's division to breathe a little bit more. And I think it would make the titles more special as well.
Greg, your thoughts?
I think it's a lot harder to do that now when we're almost a year into the brand split as opposed to having done it right off the bat. And I was a proponent of doing that. I was a proponent of having one champion that for each division that traveled. I think that was the best way to make each title stay important. Now, WWE has gone the route of doing a hard split. Champions on each brand. There's no traveling, and I'll take this time to commend WWE. I'm impressed and quite frankly shocked at how they've kept the brand split a hard split. You know, there haven't been any panic super shows on Raw where, oh, this for whatever reason is going to be a Raw SmackDown super show where the brands are combined for this episode, or, you know, constantly trading wrestlers back and forth. They did the superstar shakeup, but other than that, they've been pretty true to the brand split, and it surprises me how well they've kept them apart. So yeah. With that in mind, I think it's a little tougher now at this stage, or even 6 months down the line, to all of a sudden say, okay, we're going to now combine the titles after we specifically created some just a year ago and go from there.
Mike, appreciate talking to you again about SmackDown. Always good to hear from you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
You bet. I want to wrap up on this note. Somebody emailed and wanted to know, what about Rusev? He was advertised for the show, didn't appear. He posted on Twitter, sorry, SmackDown Live, I had to make the Predators NHL game. See you when I see you. I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, the idea that the Bulgarian brute cares about the NHL, I guess fits his social media and Total Divas persona, but not his on-air pro wrestling persona. But the idea that he's blowing off SmackDown to go to an NHL game, I guess, puts some heat on him. I don't know how I feel about the idea that he was supposed to be at the show and advertised and didn't show up. If saying, well, I decided to go to a hockey game instead is a satisfactory answer from a business standpoint. I don't know if anyone's going to be asking for refunds, but, I mean, Greg, your reaction to Rusev's explanation?
As a Ducks fan, Rusev is now a mega heel in my book.
is it acceptable for him to go to a hockey game?
Well, I you mean like in the storyline or in?
I don't know, the whole thing.
For real,
it isn't a storyline.
Exactly.
He was advertised and hyped and didn't appear. It doesn't matter if it's storyline or, you know, how you frame it. He was advertised and he didn't show up because he went to wanted to watch, you know, Anaheim and Nashville.
Well, is that why he was there? Or did WWE say, hey, we're running long, we're cutting your segment, you're going to be next, you're going to be on the show next week, and they didn't even fly him in? I mean, that could have been something that happened, too. It could have been on WWE's end.
We'll investigate. We'll investigate. Greg, thanks. Okay. Always a pleasure having you on the show.
Sure.
Thanks.
Good talking to you, Wade.
Good talking to you. That's Greg Parks, his column in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, available if you subscribe to the paper copy, pwtorch.com/papercopy. Get 12 pages packed with news, results, commentary, and analysis every week, pwtorch.com/papercopy, or go VIP and get a digital subscription. Tons of podcasts every week, over a dozen VIP-exclusive podcasts, plus the live cast, ad-free, plug-free, and ad-free access to our website, over 1,500 weekly back issues dating back to the late 1980s, covering in real time pro wrestling's biggest stories in depth for nearly 30 years. And also, you can get access to our paper copy newsletter in PDF and all text format, including Greg Parks' column on NXT. Bruce Mitchell's column this week just came in during the show. He is writing about dives. #dive. So I'm looking forward to reading and editing that for the newsletter on deadline tonight. And speaking of deadlines, I have one facing me, one looming. And so I will sign off for today and be right back at you tomorrow for the midweek flagship with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net and then ex-WWE creative team member Kevin Eck. You guys turn out when he's on for good reason. Tune in Thursday at 1, not Mun, 1, at 1 o'clock Eastern. And that's 10 Pacific with phone calls and questions. And we'll preview this whole weekend of events, NXT TakeOver and the Sunday pay-per-view with both Jason Powell tomorrow and Kevin Eck on Thursday. So that's the lineup this week. It's one of our stronger lineups. Pat McNeil, Greg Parks, Jason Powell, Kevin Eck, 4 days in a row. Thanks for your support, everybody. It is, our growth here at the live cast has been tremendous over these years. And it has been very cool getting to know a lot of the callers over the years. And so we look forward to more of that the next couple days here this week. So tune on in. Download us. Also, thanks to those of you who have left good reviews on iTunes and on Stitcher. If you like what we do, if you listen this far, I hope you do. Otherwise, you're a masochist. Why would you want to listen to an hour and a half of a show you didn't like? So if you like the show, go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go wherever it is you listen to podcasts, but an area where they allow star rating and comments. And give us a 5-star rating and leave some kind comments. We always appreciate it, and we invite you to do that. All right, here are some details on going VIP. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP-exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host 3 other flagship VIP-exclusive podcasts, The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with the one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost 3 decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. while that ad was running, I'm looking in the background at WWE Network, and the good old days of Goldust and R-Truth on a ride-along, talking about Japanese food. R-Truth says, "You don't like Japanese food. You don't really like it. I bet you like mushrooms, too," says Goldust. R-Truth says, "That come from cow doo-doo. You know what I'm saying? You might want to go eat some doo-doo yourself, you eat dork. Or you eat dorky. Who eats dorky? All right, let's go eat some Japanese food." These guys are staring at me over here like I'm an idiot as Goldust in full outfit walks in a Japanese restaurant. Only on WWE Network. And then he had Anderson and Gallows talking to cardboard cutouts in the backseat of Finn Balor and AJ Styles, deciding who was the better leader of the club. So when I go check out the March 20th edition of Ride Along, which is airing right now after 205 Live and Talking Smack. Thanks again, everybody, for your support and for joining us. And, until tomorrow. Wade Keller. Encouraging you to follow me on Twitter, @TheWadeKeller. And follow our brand at PW Torch and at MMA Torch and PWPodcasts.com. The newly revamped website with in-depth recaps and reviews of wrestling personality-hosted podcasts. Go check that out at PWPodcast.com. Some compelling quotes from Lillian Garcia, John Cena, and the latest big names hosting podcasts. Whole summaries, including quick takes at the beginning of the top items and revelations and quotes, followed by in-depth details with timestamps to help you guide you along on your podcast listening. That's it for now. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking Greg Parks and our callers and signing off, and our listeners. This is